Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
Hey guys, before we start, a quick shout out to Alpha Dog Nutrition for sponsoring this podcast. Alpha Dog products are now available at dusupply.com, and you can use code ALPHADOG15 at checkout for 15% off and a credit for free shipping to try it yourself. Now let's get you to your podcast.
All right, we got Matt Borch. How are you, Matt?
Doing good. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I'm getting frustrated with technology this morning, today, or whatever. But it's actually kind of some of the topic I want to talk to you about, technology.
Yeah.
Ironic. I've been trying to. I'm heading to go do a NRL shoot. Anyways, I got these binos that are all this fancy shit that they range, and you know, these ballistics and you know, these long distance shooting competitions.
Yep. Well, anyways, I can barely hear you.
Is that better?
That's better.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to one of these long range shooting deals, this like NRL rifle, you know, hunts or yep. shoots or whatever. And anyways, so I got one of these Garmin tactical watches, and I've been trying to get it linked up, and it's not been fun trying to get the stupid technology linked up.
Yep.
So, which is ironic, yep. because that's one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about, was you went to you're on a board or a committee of some sort, right? For that kind of topic.
Yeah. So I was on the HAT committee, with Fish and Games. They put together 24 people from across the state of Idaho to look at the HAT group, stands for Hunting and Advanced Technology, and how that kind of aligns with people's thoughts on ethics and fair chase and what we thought about several issues.
What does HAT stand for?
So HAT was for Hunting and Advanced Technology.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's basically a committee that was kind of put together to talk about some of the ethical questions of hunting as technology is improving.
Yeah. Yeah. The Fish and Game Commission have been getting several people or comments online that, you know, like they need to restrict the rifle scopes to nothing over a 3x9. Range finders over 400 yards, game cameras, you know, no exposed turrets, drones they need to kind of look at. The verbiage on that is archery and muzzleloader technology getting too much that with these things that it's affecting the harvest rates.
Right.
And so we looked at all those things and
yeah, we'll talk about some of that stuff. That some of those are really interesting. What was the verdict on like the scopes? Just taking one, like, you know, 3x9 scope. I don't even know, do they even make those anymore?
Well, that was one of the big questions is like, boy, I mean, when I first grew up, it was a Redfield 3x9, but now they're, I mean, you look at scopes and scopes without turrets, which, I mean, my big thing on exposed turrets is, well, you can still take the caps off and dial for your yardage or your minutes of angle. I mean, that's easy. It's just going to add time, but you can still dial your dope.
Right.
You know, but yeah, the technology's advanced that, well, if you're just finding that, it's going to be hard because most every store is selling all those things. But, you know, they put out a survey to 15,000 or 20,000 people in the state spread out by region, you know, so equal. And they ask them, like, on those things, like, do you think that these are fair chase? And would you, you know, would that technology be used for big game hunting? Would you agree or disagree to it? So
right.
Most of those things, like rifle scopes, range finders, stuff like that, it had like, 73% on range finders, people agreed to it. So
yeah.
Then when you get down to like game cameras, it was 50%, 50-50.
You're talking cell phone game cameras?
And then so regular game cameras came out.
Yeah, regular versus cell phone or?
Yeah, so regular came out as about 50-50, agree or disagree. And then they asked two different questions. One was, do you agree or disagree of the following technologies, how they align with fair chase ethics? So like cell phone cameras was 54% support and 46% opposed.
Okay.
So, boy, pretty close there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when they asked, you know, do you agree with that technology to hunt big game with? Like transmitting cell phone cameras were 52% in support and 48% opposed. So, boy, just
really
pretty close to 50-50 there.
Yeah, and I've always – that's been a tough one for me. I got a couple cell phone cameras that I've never set up. I had a couple early on, and then I got actually two sitting by my desk now. Costco had a sale on them or something like last year, and so I picked up two of them. But I have a hard time – like I had them last year during deer season and I was like, man, I wonder if I should just set this up on a hole somewhere and, you know, catch a really nice buck where it's not going to, anyways, you could use it where it just sends you the picture. And I don't know if it's legal. I've tried to figure out in Washington if it's legal or not. And it hasn't been really clear to me. But I've just had a hard time doing it, you know, like ethically, that's not how I want to shoot my deer, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, it seems like all the Western states right now, they're kind of juggling with that balance right there, trying to figure out what's, you know, what's enforceable, what's ethical and aligns with fair chase. And, you know, some have banned some of these items and some have said they're fine and it's something to be addressed, you know, within a year or two. You know, and then the other thing to think of on like cell phone cameras or regular game cameras is like Arizona, they had a problem and they showed pictures of like 36 cameras on one water hole. And, you know, that's perception is pretty bad. You know, when you look at supply like that.
36 like different people, like different.
Different people had a camera on this one water hole. and the problem is like, if you look at certain states or you could say different regions of like the state of Washington or Idaho, you've got the desert people where there's not very much water. And so they're going to be putting cameras on every little water hole to see what's there.
Yeah.
And then you've got other spots like Northern Idaho and different spots of like Oregon or Washington where there's a lot of water. Putting a camera on a water hole probably isn't going to be too good for you. I mean, there's just so much water.
Yeah.
You're going to need better on a game crossing. And so there's a lot of variables there when you look at that throughout the geographic of the state and the area. You know, it might be one person's thought process on how they're doing it in like the desert area versus the spot where there's a lot of water in the other part of the state is totally different. So you have to look at both sides of that.
Yeah.
And boy, that's where I think you get into that. Some people agree, some people don't, you know.
So in your groups, how much, you know, did you see the split inside the group? I mean, I'm guessing you'd have had some kind of activist in there that didn't want anything, right? I mean, or.
Yep. Yeah, it was kind of a variety. You know, that was the thing is there was hunters in our group. There was people that had never hunted before. So you had the non-hunters in there. So right. They had their opinions, you know, so you could see their perspective on things. And, you know, some people, like I was just talking about statewide, when you look at it, would you be good if we banned this? And you look at a couple different things there. And one is there public support for it?
Right.
Well, for 50-50, there really isn't a very good argument on that. And then if you look at, is it increasing our harvest rate? Well, it's not. In the last 5 years, we haven't seen harvest increase. And so, you know, on some animals, you could probably say in certain situations, you could say it is having an effect, or it's having an effect in my area, but not in other areas. We only looked at it as far as ungulates. So only like deer, elk, antelope, those kind of things. They were fine with us. Not talking about bears, wolves, the carnivores there, because they want better bear identification and want you to have it as quick as possible so you're not saying getting a grizzly bear in the harvest.
Yeah, makes sense.
And the other thing to look at is it enforceable? And if those aren't being met, then I don't really see a need. Why would you make a recommendation or a change if those things aren't? If you're not increasing the harvest rate and there isn't public support for it, and it's a pretty hard one to, it's tough to say, well, the bear hunters can use it, but the deer hunters can't.
Yeah.
So if it's fair for one, it should be fair for all, or you got to take it away from all, you know, and that's, and in our group, there are people, some of the thing is they sent that survey out. Several people were mad that they didn't get their voice heard.
So Idaho sent out a survey on these topics.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you're saying some people didn't get it or something.
Yeah. So like there's seven regions in Idaho and they took out of those seven regions, they took, I think it was 15,000 or 20,000 people random throughout that had bought a sportsman pack or had a deer or elk tag in their pocket. And they sent that survey out to them. And so they answered that survey, you know, like we were just talking about, like, do you agree with this technology for being used for big game hunting?
Yeah.
And does it align with your fair chase ethics? You know, and that's where it came back. Like drones had 10% people agreed to them. Thermals and night vision was about 23-24%. So those ones are pretty easy to see, like, you know, modern mapping technology. That was another thing they was looking at. It was like, boy, Onyx could really shoot, harvest a lot of animals with this new modern mapping technology out there. Well, 95% of the people agree to it. So
right.
There's no reason touching some of that stuff. And so.
Huh.
But.
How long did this this committee go for?
We met for about three and a half months.
Really?
I think it was about 670 hours.
Dang.
So it took up a lot of time. We met every month, a couple times a month and a couple times in person. And then we'd break into little groups and see where we all thought on it. And then we'd break into other little groups and have the same kind of conversation. Then we'd meet together and talk about, does everybody agree with what that little group said? And sometimes it was, everybody agreed on it, and sometimes not, so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty big project that, it's good that you had somebody at the table there to sit at. What other groups were there? So yeah, I'm sure you had like the elk hunters, non-hunters, just pretty much a mix of everybody.
Yeah. So there was hunters and non-hunters. There was the trappers were in there. I was the hound guy in the room. There was actually a second hound guy that was in the room. He was also like a county commissioner. And okay. So he saw it from the different side of like the county side. There was a prosecuting attorney in there. There's some long range shooters in there that do a lot of the long range stuff. There was concerned hunters in there that, too much of a harvest and our kids won't ever see a deer or an elk again if we keep going the same path we're on.
Right.
So it's kind of a pretty big variety.
What was one of the surprising, and so we kind of just jumped right into this conversation. We didn't even warm it up.
Yeah.
I was like, man, I want to hear a bear story. But you were out bear hunting. We got our podcast canceled yesterday because you were too busy. We jinxed ourselves when we were like, oh, yeah, you just go out for a quick morning hunt and we'll record a podcast in the afternoon. You'll have to tell me the story because that didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was going to be a quick race. Got up there and there was 6 or 7 inches of fresh snow and I couldn't see any tracks, but the dogs were rigging. So I turned them loose and ended up baying a real big bear, old bear, for 13 hours.
Yeah.
Finally got in front of him and so that was pretty cool to see. He rushed me once during the day. I got close to the tree and he was just backed up next to it, and then he rushed right by me and I was like, well, that was fairly close. And then I put on about 19 miles yesterday and in snow, so it was, and I left my snowshoes at home, so that didn't help.
Oh.
But I got back to the truck at 10:40 at night. And then I still had two other dogs that were down the hill. They were had another bear treed. So it was about 3.5 hours to get to those dogs.
Oh, really?
So it was a long day, but the bear's, he's pretty old boar, so that was pretty cool. But he rushed me at, it was about 4 to 5 yards 4 to 5 feet when I ended up harvesting him. So he was close. He was running right at me, so that was an easy decision.
Yeah, man. So, and how did it start? So, you just started just,
yeah. So I have a bear bait right there, and so I turned loose off the bear bait, and then the dogs trailed out about a mile and a half, and then got the bear jumped, and then went into a split race, and two dogs went on the other bear, and the other ones stayed on the big bear, and ended up getting both of them caught. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So,
well, if you're going to ditch me for a podcast, like the last famous last words were like, we'll just, when you get back, we'll record after that. We both joked about the fact that I'm like, hey, I'm not saying this like your wife. Like, we're not gonna make a date out of it. I know stuff can go wrong. I think we jinxed ourselves.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, it was fun. It was a good day. I got there and I was about 6.8 miles from the truck, and then I'd left my backpack at the truck, and so I had to walk all the way out, get the backpack, and then head back in to go get the bear out. So
that was
one of those things where you're like, all about your decisions. I should have thrown my backpack on. So, and the snowshoes.
You don't make that decision twice. Next time.
Yep.
Do you have that pack?
Yep.
It's a tough decision to decide to turn around and go back that far. That's a long ways.
Yeah. I thought I was tougher than I was. I thought, well, I'll just skin him out and throw him over my shoulder. I'll walk out with the first load, and that didn't go so well. But
oh, that's funny.
Plus, sopping wet. So,
yeah. But, hunting by yourself, or you have somebody with you?
Yeah, I just hunted by myself yesterday, so it was kind of relaxing. And my boy was going to go, but then he had to turn some stuff in at school, so he couldn't make it. And so he was pretty bummed that to miss out on a race like that, you know, to have a bear bait up all day, watching them on the open hillsides. And,
yeah, it always happens like that. Like they can't go, or, you know, I was Bradley a couple times. He'll be like, you think it's going to be good? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, probably not. But then he doesn't go, and it's like, man, it was epic.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah, it's always the fun part. You know, you're like, oh, man. But you get to share that story with him, so that's even better, you know. Just like, he's going to go on the weekend, and I can't go. So maybe he'll have another cool experience then. And, you know, so like, last week we went out, I got one flat tire, then got it fixed, went to the bear tree, my oldest boy left in his truck, and then I got a second flat tire, no cell service. So you're like, oh, you know. But
you have an in-reach, you have to walk out.
I had to walk out. My boy had my in-reach with him.
Oh,
so I had to go out to get service. And my boy's like, well, I'll go on a walkabout and see if I'm finding something cool, or I'm just going to go up here on this range up by these cliffs. And I'm like, well, stay on the bottom end, you know?
Yeah.
And he went up there and went exploring, and dang if he didn't find a sheep head. They'd been, looked like he'd been crushed in the rocks, maybe broke a boulder off loose when he's coming off the cliff or something. And he's about 12 feet up. And there's a big rock sitting right on top of his head.
Really?
So, yep. So that was pretty crazy. And so I had my boy bring a ladder back, and was able to get one side of it out, and it sheared the skull off in half, you know. So that was kind of crazy to see. So, But you're in there with a pry bar getting these boulders out, and then you're like, sure hope one doesn't break loose.
Somebody else is going to be the same sheep
spot
head
as that sheep was.
Exactly. But this was going to come back years later and be like, oh, look at that. There's somebody with a rock on their head. Human.
Yeah. It'd be like, oh, that's not too smart.
So. Yeah.
But that was pretty cool for him to find something like that. It's like, all you could see was he took a picture of it. He's like, that looks like a lamb's tip on a sheep horn. And so he took a picture and he goes, what does this look like to you? And I said, well, that looks like a sheep horn. And So we brought that ladder up and climbed up there 12 feet. And sure enough, that's what it was. So pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I found it.
Yeah. So that's pretty neat. So
he just poked around through the rocks.
But you never know, he's got to get out there and do some hiking.
He just poke around through rocks and stuff and just looking for just stuff.
Yeah, the elk and stuff, the elk and the sheep, they'll run like right below those cliffs.
Yeah.
And there's these little shelf systems. And so he went up there looking for elk sheds and stuff like that. And then, or maybe a dead sheep, you know, and there's been quite a few sheep in this area, but now they hang a little bit further to the south. So, but you just never know. Sometimes in the winter you wonder if they're over there too. So
yeah. Interesting. Well, yeah. Man, that sounds like a pretty good race yesterday. I mean, I'm guessing the dogs are all nice and tired and relaxing today, huh?
Yeah, they were pretty smoked after that race, you know, that long of a race and bay up. And And so, especially getting all that snow, they were just, when the bear came out, all I could see was their heads coming out of the snow, you know? So,
right. How deep of the snow?
It was waist deep.
Oh, man.
So, probably knee deep for you.
Yeah. But I'd be cussing more than you, though. I'm getting to be out of shape, my legs.
Yeah, it was a good one. He'd run up in that deep snow, and then they'd get him stopped, and then he'd turn and run right back down to the bottom. So I actually made that loop 4 times yesterday.
Really?
Trying to cut him off, and then he'd run right down in the sagebrush, right down the flats, and he'd stop, and then I'd cruise down there, and then an hour or two later, he'd burn right back up to the top again in that snow. Finally made a bad move.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, finally got an opportunity, huh?
Yep. Yeah, it was in the lodgepole pines, so it was real close. You know, just they're so thick and close, you don't have much option when you're, you know, 3 to 10 yards is all you can see. So.
Yeah.
Man. So, but I wish we'd had a video camera on it, you know. That would have been pretty cool.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, sounds like it'd been a pretty exciting one. Yeah, well, that sounds good. What, I know I had a couple topics I wanted to talk to you about. You guys have been doing your just some pictures on your youth stuff too. And then, that was the hat, the committee, we kind of touched on that, but what was the input? Let's go back to that other topic for a second and finish that up. What was the impact put that you were hearing from the groups, like on the cell phone cameras, which is probably the one I want to hear about is the optics. You know what I mean? Or they're talking about, I seen on the list, they were talking about, you know, optics over 9 power.
Yeah. So with,
like, what was some of the input? You know what I mean? Like, from different people or different groups? I mean, what, you know, in your guys'
input? They had a couple different ones. So we had, you could get on the hat committee and you could make, the general public could put in comments. And so we received, like, I think 300 comments or something like that on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys were pretty passionate one way or the other. Like, long range hunting needs to be addressed, you know, and then, they were trying to figure out how to do that, you know, as far as, doing that. Let me see if I can find, but when they did the, and so there's a lot of those that were like, you need to figure out how you can manage your long range, hunting. So, well, that's, you have to pass a course and you can take a shot out to, like, you get certified out to so many yards, and but that's not enforceable.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that'd be really difficult. And what kind of yardage were they talking about? I mean, just perspective. The other thing I think about is you know, different terrains are different. You know, I mean, like, you guys can see so far, you know, that I mean,
yeah, that's the thing is, you know, certain parts of the state, some of that's so much different, you know. And so when you look at that, in our area, boy, you can see 10 miles. So, you know, taking a 1,000-yard shot, if you're actually – I mean, it always comes up like a 1,000-yard shot. Well, this guy made a 1,000-yard shot. We got to start curving this stuff back because people can make those – long range shots. And I'm like, well, I got an old Sharps in the gun cabinet that I can dial right up to, and it's old, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So the technology's been here for a while. It's just now it's a lot more.
It's popular.
It's very popular, and you got a scope you can dial in and you can zoom in. You can see the animal really well.
Yeah.
You know? So that's the hard part with some of that. You know,
and the flip side of that is it takes practice to shoot that. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Going, right now I'm shooting a gun that hits 1,000 pretty easy and consistently, right? Either my boy's 6.5 Creedmoor, or I got a 25 Creedmoor that I'm shooting this weekend. And there, I mean, we've gone through the process of developing the load, dialing it in, we know the dope, we know what it does, we've validated it out to 1,000, 1,200. You know, I was I was last weekend they had a mile shoot, and I mean it was pretty much you had five shots at a mile, and I didn't hit the target, yeah. But I seen the dust like literally probably between 12 to 18 inches above it, and then I adjusted for my last shot. And I think I was like 12 inches below it. So I missed, you know, it was a 50-50 shoot. So you hit the target or fastest or earliest. It was a pot shoot, you know, potluck shoot. You pretty much put $20 in the bucket and all the shooters yep. go. And I was yep. like, holy cow. Like, but that gun has been dialed in and to do that was interesting. Now, if you just take an average hunter that's never shot past 100 yards or 200 yards on the bench, now they're going to have a hard time hitting it 400 or 500 yards, you know, in yeah. pressure. And so it's like, everybody talks about these $1,000 shots. It's like, yeah, they can be easy, but they also, you gotta prepare for them. You know what I mean? It's not ethical to, yeah. to just grab the old 30-odd six out there that you just sighted at 100 yards and be like, oh yeah, we're going to shoot that thing. Yeah. Probably going to hit it.
Yeah. And that's the thing with it is some people are very comfortable with it because they do a ton of practice on it mm-hmm. and they know their capabilities and other people, you know, you look at a horse guy and he wants to go out there and he wants to shoot a deer with his grandpa's 30-30 lever action.
Yeah.
And he thinks, boy, a 300 yard shot is super long. We should limit it to more reasonable. And it's similar to like ethics or fair chase. If you get 100 people in a room and you ask, what's your definition of this? And what's your definition of long range shooting? Everyone's going to be different on that because they've been taught and trained different.
Yeah.
Their abilities are so much different than others, you know, so that's the hard part there. And so, you know, That's the tough part, but everybody's so like Arizona, they're doing one right now. They wrestled with this. They're doing a social media campaign right now, and it's called hashtag I am fair chase. And so just getting that mindset of people that if a non-hunter was looking at this or someone else was watching you do it, would they say that's fair chase or would they say that that's ethical?
Right.
So trying to change that mindset a little bit. And that's always the question of the hour, you know, like how can we help change that or influence that? And so I think there's a lot of that and you could look at that in a lot of different scenarios, not even optics, but hounds or oh, yeah. whatever it may be is.
I was going to say that's why probably we're interested in this is because we know that, like people are going to, you know, bring in the hound and go, oh, is the hound fair? You know what I mean? Like it mm-hmm. does, that hounds are not technology, but then they talk about the GPS systems on there and be like, oh, well, there are GPS systems on the hounds. And
so that was one of the things that was brought up is, how about GPS units? I mean, we looked at this again, it's been 6 years ago.
Right.
This was brought up again then. And one of the big ones there was GPS units, dog tracking collars, and telemetry. They were all on the chopping block. Those are not ethical or not fair chase. And so they should be off the docket. Two-way radios. I mean, some of the stuff that some people think is bad is kind of a hard thing. It's like, well, we got to have those.
Yeah.
You know, so you know that's why we're watching it so heavy.
what was let's talk about that a little bit on the dog collar stuff. What was the consensus? What was the pressure? You know what I mean? What were the talking points for them to take him away? I mean,
so one of the big things is, you know, if you sat down and you wrote down a definition of what is ethical and fair chase. So Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young, they both wrote down their standards for it. And some of the states have gone in a sense that they don't think an animal should be entered into the book.
So go back up just a little bit. So Boone and Crockett and Pope and Young were there. It's your meeting, you said? Is that what you just...
Yes, yeah, so they had their presence of both of them.
Yeah, so what was their definition? Summarize it, but... You
sure, it's on their website. So one of them, it talks about, you know, their dilemma, like long-range hunting. They said, we can't come up with a consensus on long-range hunting. There's just too many variables.
Okay.
But a person needs to be really look at the ethical end of it. And if non-hunter sees that, what would they do? And then when you get down in the weeds a little bit further on, like a GPS unit and two-way communication, like to a dog collar, it doesn't come right out and say that, but it does say... And I think it's Boone and Crockett. I should look this up, but it's like if there is two-way communication, they don't think that is ethical in a sense. And so that was one of their concerns. And it could be more like the two-way radio, like you're guiding someone into a harvest. But you start looking at that gray area there. A GPS unit and a dog tracking collar can be the same way. And so you've seen some states, if you look at the verbiage on that in between states, in the game departments, you can see some of that verbiage that they're starting to look at some of that.
Yeah. And so I think on Boone and I am not a Boone and Crockett guy. So like, you know, correct me if I'm wrong or not, but I think, at least from the guides and the outfitters I've talked to, if you use the GPS to locate the animal or as part of the hunt, they aren't supposed to be registered under Boone and Crockett, you know, like for a cougar example. You would have to, you could have the collars on, you could have the handhelds, but you weren't supposed to use the handhelds as a part of the hunt. You know, the handhelds were only supposed to be used to locate lost dogs, or, you know what I mean? Like to retrieve dogs after the hunt was over or whatever.
And for the safety of the hunter, I think it says so.
Yeah. So it can be used for safety, but
that's kind of some of that balancing act that some of the states are looking at right now. And those are pretty big ones.
Yeah.
If we went back to the beeper box, we'd lose a lot of houndsmen. We'd lose a lot of different, just like if you took away a GPS unit, but they're for safety in so many ways that usually, you know, cause they need that to make it back to the truck or an emergency situation like you're in reach.
Well, that's the part, you know, the ethical part of it, even with these technologies I always try to remind people we're here for the dogs. Like we're here to listen to the dogs you know what I mean? Like if we're watching this screen, like a video game, then we probably are relying on technology too much. You know what I mean? I might make some people mad at that, whatever, but the intent for these callers, because if that's what happens, it gets really more and more difficult to justify that I want to sit in my living room with, you know what I mean? Like, okay, well, why can't you just have that on a TV screen, on a big 27-inch TV screen, and we can just sit there in an RV and wait until it's done? It's like, no, that's not what the hunt's about. You know, the hunt is about getting out there, engaging with your dogs, listening to what your dogs are telling you, you know, through barks and all of that, and being active, you know, a part of it. So, I sometimes worry about, you know, that being taken and used as talking points in some of those meetings to be like, oh yeah, that's not fair, Chase.
Yep. So, I mean, that's always those things, you know, always the creep, you know, technology is getting better and better, and how is it aiding in the hunter too much, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of where I like the survey you asked earlier. I brought up the deal, and so the graph, if you would.
Yeah.
And so, like, the talking points were like modern mapping technology. 93% people agreed to it. Modern optics, 90% of the people were in support.
So that
modern
was
bow technology.
The optics there, that was kind of like the 3x9 question. Like that was the 3x9.
No, then it's like modern firearm optics. It was 82% about in support.
Yeah, I know. Rangefinders. When you talked about earlier, you said, oh, somebody said maybe you limit to a 3x9. Is that when you said that would be in the modern optics section?
Or? Yeah. Yep. Like, modern firearm optics.
Yeah. Okay. Because so, you probably have like, I'm guessing your binos and your spotting scopes and stuff like that that are pretty active out there for glassing.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And that's modern optics. So 90% of the people support it.
Okay.
Firearm optics, you know, it's 8x82 or 83% support. Rangefinders over 1,000 yards. That's about 82%. Transportation.
What do you mean?
About like transportation. 70% of the people. What's that?
I said explain these a little bit more. So like transportation. What would that include? What were the topics?
So transportation, like on the transportation bill, like we have certain areas on ours that are close to hunting off a four-wheeler or a motorized vehicle.
Right.
And so a lot of people are okay with the way that is running right now. So it's restricting that motorized transportation.
Okay.
There's 30% of people that would like to see less restrictions on that. So
you mean less restrictions? So most people were in support of restricting?
Most people are in support of restricting that a little bit so that they're not seeing a four-wheeler or razor up every ridge.
Oh, you like off-road, you mean?
Off-road, yeah. Gotcha. Like so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so that's kind of a different one. And that's a hot topic. You know, all these will go to rule, and so they'll go out to a big survey here in about a month, like, how do you guys, do you support this or not support it?
Right.
So
see, and that's so different here. There's no off-road in here where I'm at, man. There's you'd be lucky to get a quad off in some of this. It'd be nice, but in some of that open ground, even retrieving an animal and stuff like that. But yeah. Okay. So keep going.
So modern rifle cartridges that was brought up, and you're about 67%. Support that.
So wow,
the technology is out there.
So like, explain that. Like,
so I mean
that's so hard. I think to enforce that is really difficult. Number one,
that's the thing is like, there's no way you can enforce that because someone loads up their own rounds.
Yeah,
I mean, there's just so many variables there. Just like long range hunting, you can't enforce that. I mean, that's just. I mean, that's part of the deal with like a rangefinder at 1,000 yards, they'll go 1,000 yards plus, and your scopes with turrets and stuff like that. I mean, that's kind of one of those things, but there's no way to enforce that one.
It's mostly, it sounds like people that are, I don't use the word ignorant, you know, but ignorant to the process, meaning they just hear about it and they don't know the process of what that entails. You know, it's like, it sounds, I mean, those we hear it all the time, remote controlled dog collars. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, they're not remote controlled dog collars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so like sometimes I think some of these, when you say that, you know, modern, what do you call them? Modern ammunition or modern cartridges.
Yeah.
It's like
modern cartridges.
It's still brass. It's still the same primer. It's still the same powder. You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
The bullet's just a little longer. You know what I mean? The ballistically.
It's just fine tuned. Yep.
Yeah. Like they may have some of these cartridges are just a longer bullet. So they're just aerodynamic, you know, more aerodynamic is than the 30 cal. But.
Yep. It went over modern crossbow technology was in that survey, and it was about 60%, 64% 80% supported that. Rifle scopes with built-in range finders. Your 60% support, 40% don't support. Modern archery optics. And so we've got one where you can't have a magnifier or a rangefinder on your bow.
Yeah.
And you're about 58% support. They'd like to see some change there, but it's not really going to happen. Transmitting trail cameras.
What do you mean some change? Like, explain that.
Well, like on the modern archery, there's there's between the two different surveys is pretty close to 50% for archery and muzzleloader equipment.
Right.
That is 50-50 if people are in support or opposed. And so it'll probably just stay right there because there's not really a great movement to change anything there. And you don't have, as far as the harvest, it's not really affecting the harvest.
Oh, yeah.
You can look up where we're at on that harvest statistics for years, you know.
Yeah, they're talking. Are they talking like the Garmin sites?
Yeah, there's a Garmin site. And stuff. There's, well, I mean, that one, Archery Optics, yeah, it was like, anyway, they were from a slider site to, you know, a single pin or a magnifier on there, just kind of where you sit on the modern, how it's listed today.
Yeah.
In the regulations.
And you're an archery shooter, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So what is Idaho's, cause this was for Idaho. So what is the kind of the general rule on archery optics?
Yeah, so on general archery optics for Idaho, you can't have a illuminated sight.
Okay.
You can't have anything that's enhanced it as far as a light or a magnifier to hunt with. Can't have a rangefinder hooked to your bow. Can't have a camera hooked to your bow. And then as far as things that are approved, you can have a slider sight, so adjustable sight, a single pin or multiple sights, multiple pins where you can adjust.
Right.
But other than that.
Mostly mechanical then. It just can't be. I mean, is a general rule mostly mechanical.
Yep.
Okay. And that stage, that kind of was like a 50-50, so like most is not going to change is what you're saying there. It's like, hey, what it is, what it is. It's probably not going to change one way or the other.
Yeah, it's 40% oppose and 60% agree with it. So it's going to stay the same.
So what do you mean agree with it? Like the way it is or the...
Yeah, so when they sent out the survey and they asked the questions, are you okay with people hunting with the current technology?
Gotcha.
And do you think it's ethical?
So 60%
said yes.
And by the definition of current, so the only one I know of is the Garmin bow site, right? Was it saying that should we make that site legal? Is that what kind of the question was? Or was the question should we keep it status quo? Saying,
do you status quo?
Okay.
Would you like to stay the same? Or, you know, I mean,
or make it more difficult. Some people it sounds like there was no option to make it easier. It sounds like it was either status quo or make it or take away is what kind of the way the question was. Well,
there's asking on these items like, do you support or not support? And then like all these items go to a recommendation to the Fish and Game Commission. And then if the Fish and Game Commission says, okay, there's a need to ask the entire state on these items. Because once the rule is open, then it goes out to a public survey pretty much. And they ask the entire state off that survey, like, all right, do you agree with modern verbiage on archery equipment? Or do you agree with transmitting trail cameras?
Right.
And they'll get that back and see off that survey, is there a need to look into this more and make a regulation on like transmitting cell cameras? Like on the first survey, it was 54 percent support. So if it comes back, it's pretty much 50-50. The commission probably isn't going to do anything. Now they might, just depending on what they see there. But that public support is a huge one.
Gotcha.
Okay. And the big thing there is, like, let's talk surveys right now. So the nationwide survey, when Fish and Game or any agency sends out a survey, usually it's 10% or under that actually fill out those surveys and send them in.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's 2%. Like our big bear survey that went out, like, what do you think, you know, should we make changes to the bear season? And here's the options here. How many people actually filled that out? The bear hunters in the state? 8%. That's ridiculous that we've only got 8%. The national standard is 10%.
Yeah.
The big thing we see off this is, man, people need to make their voices heard. And they need to get out there and fill out that survey. There's no reason to gripe and say, well, they're going to do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't fill one out. It's like, if everybody will fill out their survey, then we would know. But 8% get to control the entire state? That's right. Crazy to me.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Hmm. What were some of the ones that you think action will happen on? So all of those pretty much had support. Which ones do you think there will be some action on?
Yeah, so I'll send this survey to you so you can see it too. But the ones that did not have support for, right?
Right.
Would be smart optics. I mean, it was only 30%.
Define smart optics. What does that
smart
mean?
Optics. Okay, so you got a huge movement right now, like we was talking earlier, like a SIG rangefinder hooks Bluetooth up to your phone and tells you
that's what I was doing this morning. I was getting frustrated
your
with this morning.
Frustration there, right?
Yeah.
But it's more along the lines, that's some of that creep that's starting to happen.
Yep.
But you've got mainly a rangefinder inside of a rifle scope. First one, when you pull up your scope at that animal, you push the button, it tells you, you know, 580 yards, here's your aiming point.
Yeah.
And so the smart optics, there's quite a line in that one. And so that one's, people don't like that. The next one, you start getting some big ones now, and this modern night vision and thermal rifle scopes.
So in just touching on that smart optics one, and mostly just for me to think about as I'm on a plane tomorrow, whatever. What is the problem, that the devices are communicating with other devices, or is it that it's calculating the dope? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what is the tangible? And it's complicated because it's enforceable, right?
In Idaho, it's pretty much to have anything that's electronic hooked to a weapon is illegal in the state of Idaho. And so that's what it's currently listed as. Okay. So like your rangefinder on your bow, or rangefinder inside the scope on your actual rifle scope. So that's where it gets into that creep, like even a camera hooked to your bow. So those little things, that's just kind of been that old school verbiage in there.
Yeah.
Now,
and I can agree with that. Like I don't necessarily, even on what I'm doing now, like I've seen that where they're talking about, well, you can get your scope in it. And I'm like, man, I don't know that I don't want that. Like I want to be able to dial my scope the way I want to. I don't want it electronic and, looking at
and there's a lot of pride that comes to that, just like at the range shooting, and you're figuring out your dope, and you can dial your turret right to it, and you get exactness. So that when you do make that ethical shot, you've made that shot plenty of times, and you know it's gonna be a quick one shot wonder if you would. And so that's what an ethical hunter, he's trying to do the best he can to harvest that animal. Now, if it just automatically does it for you, that's not really putting your time into it.
No, I can agree with that. And that's a hard thing is for me.
School versus old school.
But. Yeah, there's different things. Hunting and shooting, you know, target shooting or whatever. And a lot of the tactical side of shooting, and I'm not into tactical side of shooting, but that's where a lot of this comes from, this night vision and this thermal. You know what I mean? Like, it's sure. really pushing the envelope. And then you get into
yep.
hunting and, yeah, it's complicated. Like I said, last year I seen a guy out with an AR hunting, and I'm like, come on, dude. Like, this not the, go grab a bolt action rifle and let's do deer hunting. You know what I mean? Like, it's,
yeah,
like we don't need the tactical in our sport, if that makes sense.
Yep. Yep. And then going right along with, like attached to that weapon or whatever, that's where you start getting into your night vision and your thermal rifle scopes.
Right.
So there was 22% of the people supported it. So the rest of them opposed it. And the thermal imaging is about the same. It's about 20% support and the 80%, 80 to 91% oppose it.
So some of those, the guys have been, you know, like they're talking about in the raccoons and stuff like that, especially. I know the pig hunting uses the thermal and stuff, but were mm-hmm. they talking about rangefinder? And I guess they weren't talking about predators or anything like that at all, but just using thermal imaging at all for hunting is what the question was.
Yeah, that was a big topic. You know, they avoided talking about your predator hunting because it's legal right now to hunt coyotes with.
Yeah.
Or, you know, some of the small game. And then we have several areas in Idaho that's expanded methods. So you can actually use them to find wolves and then get in on those wolves in those few areas. Right now, the verbiage in the state says that if it's attached to a rifle, it is illegal.
Gotcha.
So now people are using a handheld, right? And they're going out there and they're scanning deer and elk. And then they're at first light, they're real close to the game.
Which that and so like is I've had some of those FLIRs and different thermals. Mm-hmm. Cause I've honestly, I mean there's some supply companies that are selling them and I looked at it, mm-hmm. you know, several years ago. And it's another one of those things I just never felt comfortable using it. And I just stopped, you know, because it's impressive how quickly you can see in a clear cut in a big open area, you know, scan something, be like, yep, right there. You know what I mean? Like it's,
oh yeah,
it's crazy.
Even in the daylight, like the morning hours,
oh, yeah.
you can pick a mule deer legs laying in the sagebrush. You can see it right off the bat.
Exactly. So those are ones that I'm like, man, that to me, I mean, it's not legal in Washington, you know, and I don't know the legalities of it for predator hunting, you know, bobcat, raccoon. Mm-hmm. I know there's some states that it is legal. I know it's pretty popular in some,
yep.
coon hunting and stuff like that in different parts and stuff. And so, but I always worry that I'm like, man, that they it's a hard one to justify for me, you know what I mean? Like I'm like, if there's people who want to try to justify that, they got to step up and present the argument because I don't have a great argument. I'm not the guy to go to bat for using a thermal image to find game.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to those drastic levels, I mean, boy,
you want it.
It gets into that spot where you're cheating versus, you know.
I don't know that I'm going to say that because I got a big customer base, Matt. So I'm going to call somebody.
I know.
But me personally, and this is where I kind of just say, hey, I'm not, you know, I'm not the end all be all judge of things, but in my world, when I look at it, when I'm in a tree and I'll spend 2 hours at a bobcat tree looking for a bobcat, you know what I mean? Like,
oh man,
glassing and glassing.
They
and,
hide yeah. real well.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, I mean, I may have it where I don't get a shot or whatever, but I'm like, yep, he won. That's to me, that's fair chase. Like even at the tree, he won. And I don't shoot a lot of them. So like I still, even if I don't get to take a picture of it, you're like, oh yeah, he's probably up there. No, he won. they or she got away.
They can hide so well. It's just amazing, you know?
Yeah. And so, and I've had them where I'm like, yep, he won. And I like I said, took that thermal. Oh, shoot. There he is right there. And I spent, when I did have thermal, I didn't spend a lot of time, but you know, I'd spend 30 minutes trying to find him. And you'd almost swear that there's no cat in that tree, and you throw it up there. And it's like, oh, there it is. Totally.
Yeah.
And, and so anyways, it was an eye opening experience for me. And I just stopped bringing it because I was like, it didn't make me feel good. Like, I guess that was one of the things is I just didn't like the way it made me feel to use that technology to find it. And I'm like, you know what? If I can't find them with my own eyes and my binoculars and part of the, I won't say it's not fun because you're sitting there for 2 hours at a tree going, I really want to pet a dog right now, but I won't pet a dog. You know, for me, I don't pet dogs until I confirm that we treat it right. So, anyways, but that's just,
that's a big deal really. So, you know, I don't mind it. As far as small game, when it comes to deer and elk, those ones, you know, kind of get you a little bit like, just wait till first light and you can find him just as fast as anybody else, you know.
So, you can, you could do some damage, like just playing with them, you know, out of season, not deer and elk hunting, you know, not using them for deer and elk, but you scan a whole, I mean, you could scan hundreds of yards of timber line and clear cuts. All like you say before dark, before light, right at first light, and something that you would normally spend 20-30 minutes, you know, 20 minutes, maybe even 10 minutes scanning the tree line. And if you wanted to hunt fast, you know, over here for blacktail, if you wanted to hunt fast, and it's like, okay, you could probably spend 10 to 15 minutes scanning one unit and then hop to the next unit and scan the next unit and hop to, with a thermal. I mean, you could literally scan it in 30 seconds and be like, yep, moving on. And that's just not that
pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yep.
So I agree. I don't want to see that.
Yeah. So those are the hot topics. You can see how that technology is changing.
Yeah.
You know, you can see that. You can see how some people are pushing the envelope and we're seeing more violations coming off it, you know, like the poaching end and, the other two, there's two other things that they went over on the survey, and one was AI for animal identification, which we're getting in a different situation with. I mean, I was like, AI for animal identification, you know, is that really a thing? You know, 91% people do not support that.
Yeah.
So they've got like cameras and they've got different apps out to help. Off drones or different things like that to help them identify.
So wildlife. That is it is a very interesting concept. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is really foreign to us. You don't have to think of like what AI and what you can do. And it's just something we got to be cautious about because, I don't think there's many houndsmen that are looking to use AI for that. But there is this overwhelming group of, like, and it comes from the tactical world or whatever, that it's like data is really powerful right now for you to use AI and data. And so you think about it and go, here's a really good question, Matt, was if – you started to pattern that bear. You know what I mean? Like, or did you? You know what I mean? Like, did you start to pattern that bear? Did that bear have a pattern that you started to pick up on?
No, I just, well, this bear, like this bear, I do know him from the previous years. This is path of running,
Okay, so
and he comes in at the first of the year and at the last of the season.
okay.
So he just comes in for about a 3-day window, you know, the first of the season and the last of the fall, the spring season, he'll come in. But off the pictures, I'm like, oh, I know exactly which bear that is, you
Yeah.
know.
And see, that's okay
But
for a human to do and to learn because you're putting in the time to do that.
yeah.
But if there was a way for AI to get a big source of data, and it could be like, here, Matt, you just need to be right here at this time. But this is what this bear does. This is what
Yeah.
all the bear, you know what I mean? Like that's the question when they ask that question about AI. It's like,
Yeah.
can you predict behavior that you didn't earn the knowledge of? You know what I mean? And I don't agree with it. Like I don't want to see that much
Yeah.
technology or data used in harvest or hunting. I'm opposed to that. Like I've said, I've had situations where I look at it and go, okay, it's a really interesting topic, but like your race yesterday would be a really good example of what you had to do as a human. You had to figure out what to do to intercept that and get in front of them. And you're looking at all these data points, which is sound and movement and where is it going? And you know what I mean? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
I wonder if AI could have done better than you.
I'm sure it's smarter than I am, you know. So you always wonder on that stuff.
Yeah.
But I love the old school where you can just get right in there and like try and predict where he's gonna go
Oh, yeah.
and that's pretty neat. And then he crosses like 500 yards down, you're like, ah, I was doing so
That
good. Well, I got another 5-mile walk now to
was
go in there, you know.
wrong. Yeah, that's the best part though.
So.
Like I said, I have no desire to see that happen. Where do I want a technology predict? Yeah, I'm getting to the point where I want to get away from technology some for hunting. You know what I mean? Listening to the dogs and like you said, trying to get to the crossing where you can see them and learn and watch. But
Sure.
yeah, that AI,
Yeah.
it's a powerful thing that's happening.
Yeah. And you wonder, like, if my grandpa was sitting here, what would he say to me right now? He'd say, put that phone down and pay attention to what's happening here.
Yep.
You know, put down the GPS and tell me which dog is barking over there.
Yeah.
You know, which one had the first strike, you know, kind of which one's doing better than the other one, you know. Sometimes we spend too much time looking at technology and where we need to be just out there listening and listen to that race. It's more relaxing, you know. I mean, it's different.
Oh, yeah.
There's different technologies out there that some of the youth really love those. Some of the older generation, they like them too, you know, for obvious reasons. But sometimes it's just hitting that reset button. What are we out there for?
Yeah.
And that's the key for me anyway, you know.
I think it needs
So
to be, and I think for most people, that's what it is. I really do.
I do too.
I think there is a subgroup of people who, whether they get these apps, you know, I mean, they're trying to get these apps now to, I mean, you could even take AI in the app world of conglomerating all of the data from every GMU unit harvest, you know, da, 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 and they go, here's your best chance of harvest of this. You know what I mean? Like they're already doing that on some level where these apps are trying to show you know. And so that's the part where it's like, man, like I could see even advanced mapping and AI using it, tree cover and you harvest and going, okay, looking at massive amounts of data that it could crunch for you. I mean, it could theoretically take the map and crunch that whole state down to you to be like, hey, you need to hunt in this, you know, 400 square yard area. And I'm guessing at some point there's going to be guys that try to do that. And it's like, yeah,
Well,
you just take it too
there is
far.
there's a well, the other thing you're seeing is we'll hunt for you, we'll scout for you, right?
Yeah.
And then they're going out and they're putting so many cameras out, and they're out there glassing, and they're pretty much being an outfitter or a guide there. And they're then if they do get a big picture of a big deer or elk, they're saying for a certain price,
yeah,
I will tell you the location. I'll tell you the GPS coordinates of that deer or elk, and it'll cost you X amount of dollars.
Right.
Location sharing, and that's a pretty big topic right now. There's a couple companies doing it, and boy, that's gonna get shut down here pretty quick, just which it should, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah,
so
that's, yeah, it's just hard. Like, all of these things are really hard to enforce, like, to it all comes back to the ethics.
And some people think, you know, with a lot of these that it's just my way or the highway, you know, they think it's easy to just make a regulation and put on there, and I'm good with it, so it'll happen. And really, a lot of these are pretty tough topics. And for, if you're the law enforcement guy out there, I mean, are you going to be able to enforce it, or how are they going to, because if I don't have probable cause, I can't ask them to see, you know, do you have a rangefinder inside that scope?
Yeah.
You know, what's in your backpack? Will you show me?
Right.
Well, if I don't volunteer that up, then if I don't have probable cause, I'm probably not going to be able to see that, you know? So some of these are pretty tough, you know, items there, you know, and it's not as easy as it sounds.
Really difficult. You know? Those meetings are really difficult when you get down to the brass tacks of how to define stuff too.
Yep.
Because it always comes back to ethics. You know what I mean? Like, and a lot of it is personal ethics about.
Yeah, and when you think of that, the last subject they brought up, drones. And so drones are getting to be a big thing. I mean, they've got drones that'll fit in your back pocket now.
Yeah.
And they got good cameras on them. They got a GPS you can program in your phone.
You can get heat sync on them. I mean, you can get heat. Signatures off of some.
They've got thermals and night vision on those things, and they can go out flying in the middle of the night and know exactly what's there before it's even daylight. I mean, you know, there's a big question, like, well, can they be used for retrieval?
Yeah, that was my question. Well, I was going to ask you. Did they even talk about that?
So it did come up, but it creates another gray area. You know, I mean, my verbiage was, I'm okay if they use it for retrieval, but if it's used for retrieval, you need to have it registered. Or if you do go out to find a game for somebody, then you have to call the local warden and say, hey, I'm so-and-so.
Yeah.
You know, somebody hit an elk right here. I'm going in this drainage, and I'm going to go see if I can find that.
Yeah.
But then the problem comes in is if you fly over that and you find it and it's still alive.
Yeah.
You can't or go in there for a full.
Yeah, I mean, it's wounded.
Or it's wounded.
Yeah.
So then it's aiding and you harvesting that animal.
Yeah. Now ethically, you should put it down because you've wounded it. So you should put it down, but you used the drone to find it. So you.
There's a lot of variables on that one. Like, boy, there's a lot of gray area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just easier to say, no, they shoot drones. Shouldn't be used in hunting season.
Yeah.
Like, plain and simple. Make it simple. Simple is easy to enforce, usually.
I had a deer that Bradley hit. I know he hit it because I found blood. Then I found some hair. And I spent days looking for it. And that was one of I don't remember what it was. I asked a game warden or whatever. Before or after, I don't remember. I just spent days searching for it, but I was like trying to find some method of finding that thing. I'm like, man, but that was the question to me is, well, if you find it alive, what are you going to do? And I'm like, that's a good point. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He goes, now you've harvested that animal using that unlawful method. Cause I was like, well, technically I didn't use it to hunt. You know, the hunt was over. I'm just trying to recover the meat. And, he goes, well, the problem is if you find that animal alive, now you broke the law. You know what I mean? Like, now.
Yep.
because you're stuck between ethically finishing the, shooting it because you already hit it, and the second thing is it's not dead, so you haven't fully harvested. So now you're stuck in this gray area where,
And you're at that point, you know, you're kind of you're in a rock and a hard spot.
Yeah.
So that's the hard part there, and so that's why we just said it was easier. I mean, with that many people that do not support it, that's an easy one, right? There should be verbiage out on it, and that verbiage will be the same for an aircraft, because a drone, anything aircraft or drone worthy, if you would, they'd all have that same regulation. We've got several poaching cases, big cases in Idaho right now that people with helicopters flying over and chasing them, you know, and then there's a couple guys pretty bad shape right now or big trouble right now with that one. So, which I guess it depends on how much money you got. If you're willing to go rent a helicopter and go try and do that, that's, you know, but just pushing the envelope, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, interesting. Yeah, those are all interesting topics, man. Sometimes we really got to think about, and I'm always interested because even though most of those topics were on ungulates, back in the back of my mind, I'm like, man, you know, they're thinking about what we do. You know what I mean? Like, that's on the mind.
That's always, and if it's not on the back of your mind, you better be starting to think that way, because they are thinking it.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, it's starting to, you know, that creep, but golly, that's why guys need to be super smart about certain things and really look at how they're doing it and what they're posting. And I mean, that's always the things that gets people in trouble, if you would. So, you know, it's, you know, just like they were hashtag I am fair chase, you know, keep it simple, keep it smart, you know, and then you're should be good to go, you know?
Yeah. Social media is going to be the catalyst.
It'll be the downfall.
I see stuff. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I don't even know. And I don't even know the right angle of attack on that, because some guys are just so headstrong that, well, I'm not going to hide anything. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and I'm proud. And I get that. Yep. Like I've been that way, but
sure.
It's like, man, this is not going to work out for us. Like, I can see the writing on the wall.
You know, and the one thing that we always need to look at too is, like when we look at Colorado and some of these different states that are just getting through with fighting some of these big fights or fighting another one. And, you know, it's always a battle we've got going on, but what is the percentage of non-hunters per state?
Yeah.
And so when we look at that and we look at what's their perception, of what we're doing, or as a houndsman or as a hunter, just in general. And you look at like Colorado, they put that big social media campaign together and they did it right, educating the public and letting them, you know what they're about and why they should vote on that subject. That's a big deal. And so our social media, we got to really blow that up for the right way and, you know, do certain events like we just did that Youth Skills Day, and we had a little over 500 youth come through, and we took them out on a bear hunt, let them walk the dogs. You know, we had the one boy in a wheelchair come up and had him take a little puppy, you know. I mean, it's those different things, you know, and then heading out those little brochures of what we do and why and how it can be educational. And that can make a huge difference.
How many guys do you have show up for that?
Helping out to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we had me and my two boys and my wife, and then we had Braden McKenna, and then we had another youth that she doesn't have a hound, but she likes it so much she shows up every year just to help kids do it. So we had about eight or nine people show up to do it. Nice. This year we had a few people that were out of town and different stuff like that, but we usually have about 15 people show up to it, and it's pretty neat deal. We explained to them about different like bears, lions, bobcat, and raccoons, and then we ask any questions that the youth have, so we can tell them, I mean, anything from, you know, biology of that animal to characteristics, different things like that, lifespan. We ask all kinds of, answer all kinds of different questions that the youth, they come up with all kinds of questions. Some are pretty tough to answer, but it's pretty neat for them to even just hook up a dog and take that dog for a walk. You know, a lot of kids, you know, when you're asking, you got, say, 50, 60 kids, youth there, and they're range from anywhere from, you know, little teeny kids to 17-year-olds, and you're like, 50, 60 kids, you're like, how many of you guys have went hunting before? And there's three kids that raise their hands. You're like, wow. You know,
oh wow,
we got a lot of non-hunters here. You know, and then you get done with the thing, and they're asking all kinds of questions, from dogs at the tree, you know, and all these different things. And great interaction, you know, for an event for a youth. But boy, it's definitely a need that we have to do some kind of outreach there to help change their perspective or enlighten them to what we do and why and how much fun it can be, you know?
Yeah. How are you pulling the kids in there? Where are you getting them from?
Yeah, so this one is a fish and game event. I think this was the 19th or 20th year that they've put it on.
So there's a bunch of different other stuff, and you guys are a part of a bigger deal?
Yep. So they pretty much reach out to all the non-for-profits or organizations that want to go. So the trappers were there. There was two archery clubs there. So they had 3D targets set up and some recurve bows so they could shoot at the animals. They had search and rescue, boat safety, water safety. They had the poaching trailer set up. They had a professor from the college, and he talked about antlers, horns, and fur, kind of different species. And then, just a little muzzleloader. They had muzzleloaders set up so the kids could shoot just a real light load, but they could shoot at balloons and pop the balloons with muzzleloaders. They got, like a little airsoft gamma pellet guns, and so they could do an accuracy thing. And then they had fly tying and fishing, so you could learn how to fish, how to tie a tie, how to actually cast on a fly rod. So just a little bit of everything, just kind of getting the kids out, getting them excited about getting out in the outdoors, if you would.
Yeah.
So
that's cool.
So, but it's a pretty neat event, you know, just, and you start looking at it and you're like, well, even if the fishing game wasn't putting that on, as sportsman groups, we should be holding that event even without them.
Yeah.
Because as sportsman group, boy, united we stand, you know, and so as we work together and get the public out there, boy, that's a win for us when we're all fighting the same fight. And so, you know, a little bit of organization on there is a huge thing. So
yeah, no, that sounds interesting. Cool. Well, I need to wrap it up because I got to get ready to head home and pack and stuff like that.
Yep.
Is there anything else you wanted to get out while you got the microphone?
You know, the biggest thing is when, as hunters or as houndsmen, boy, if we have something come up and there's a survey that goes out, everybody they know needs to do it.
Yeah.
So it's more than just 10% the national average. If we have a bear or a lion or a bobcat or a raccoon survey goes out, or maybe just one on these different items like for that advanced technologies.
Yeah.
It's super important that we all voice our opinions, because if we don't voice our opinions, we're going to lose. And so, boy, the biggest thing here is voice your opinion, and, you know, stand up tall, and that's a huge thing, is so we can unite and make our voice heard.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. Well, all right, Matt, hopefully next year I'm going to make it to your guys' banquet. I think you guys were stacked up. I don't know if you're up against Wisconsin. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We had a ton of people this year, so that's good. So
yeah, I enjoyed it last year. I really enjoyed you guys' banquet. That was a fun one. I definitely got it on my list to try to get back out there again.
Yeah, hopefully you can make it next year.
If you guys can make it like on a weekday, that'd be easier for me. You know, like
Tuesday, Wednesday.
You know what I mean? Like, I can take off of work to get over there. That'd be nice for me.
I know. You know, we try and do it on a Saturday, and we try and do it as a lunch one so we can bring in people from other states and across the whole state.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, like this one we had was about 650 people, and I think we had 258 youth. So, boy, if we can draw in across that whole state, that's why we do it on the weekend.
I'm just saying, if you're looking at my schedule,
I know
Wednesdays are good. Wednesdays are good. I can come in Tuesday. I can take off.
I know. That would be good.
It's always tough. I do hunter ed, and every year you're supposed to take an IST, a training class or whatever. And I told the gal, I was like, man, you guys need to do this on the week. And the hound events you can't, because you know it's a banquet. So I'm totally joking, but. But anyways, on hunter ed, for as an instructor, I told him, I said,
"Oh yeah,
you need to make those on a weekday." You know what I mean? Like, because most of us, like, our weekends are really valuable time. You know what I mean? So like, we all work. I would much rather take off a day of work to go sit in a class, and I could talk to my boss, and I probably could get away with that. And that would work great. But you asked me to come out on a Saturday and burn my Saturday. I'm like, sorry, now you got a whole bunch of other pressures that I'm trying to fight against now. So
let me ask the little lady, and she said no.
Exactly. So I asked my dogs, and they said they wanted to go out Saturday. So I always thought that whenever I was talking to her, and it was for Washington, like I said, and she's like, that's a good idea. I said, I bet you. You know, because it's only like 20 people in that class anyways. I said, I bet you'd fill that class up easier than you think for hunter ed instructors. You know, like all of us, half of them are retired anyway. So I'm like,
yeah,
they're going to be able to make a Wednesday or Thursday afternoon or a Thursday, you know, even at noon. And if I had to take a half a day off, I'm like, but when you go up against my Saturday, I'm like, because one of the IST in-service trainings was, I think it was up Oregon, you know, Oregon's dinner banquet. And I'm like, sorry, I got to go to this dinner banquet. You know what I mean? I this is much more important to me sitting in a hunter ed class right now. I want to do that, but this dinner is more important to me, or Wisconsin, or, you know, I mean, some of these different places I had to travel. And so I missed my training this year. I'm still covered, but anyway, so it was that was where that came from. Yeah, Tuesday, Thursday, I'll make it. If you can put it on a Thursday, I'll definitely make it next year. I'll write you in.
I'll let the board know.
Yeah, let the board know. 650 versus one. You know what I mean? If they want me there, or they want 650 people there, I'm not going to hold you to
worth
it.
The squeeze.
Exactly.
So, yeah,
but give me the dates. I definitely want to try and make it over there, even if it is a Saturday. I'll probably throw it on the schedule.
Yeah, should be good.
All right, Matt.
Should be good.
Good chat with you.
All right, good talking to you too.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.